This is The After Party, live with Kim McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
Aloha. Happy Aloha Friday to you. Here we are on The After Party Live. Thank you for hanging out. My music's a little loud there. Thank you for hanging out. I have my drink. I don't have my couch, but I'm ready to go. I hope you all had a good Friday so far. And it's a rainy, chilly day, but we have a lot of interesting and fun stories to discuss. So thank you for hanging out. I do want to tell you that there is a new PayPal link. So the old PayPal links or donation page is gone. And you should have received a message saying that if you want to contribute to the show, you have to re-sign up. So there is a new link. It is in the show description. And I just wanted to point it out in case anybody is looking for it for any reason. Okay, there we go. Thanks for being here on this Friday. Let's talk about this first story because I just find it really interesting that some people are profiting off of very famous art. And I think I'm guilty of being someone who did this or not profited, but purchased something that is kind of like, I don't know, a take on art, kind of a fun take on pop culture. And I don't know whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. So I thought we could talk about it. Oh, Jim talking about Hawaii. Oh, Hawaii is not the same as Hawaii, which is the first state and the second is the island name. Yeah, Hawaii versus the island of Hawaii or the Big Island, right? We did have a good time, Jim, though, with your island trivia yesterday. I should say that. Aloha. Aloha, everybody. Yeah. Okay. Okay. How come you can't send money on the chat? Because everything is being switched over. So the old Google account is gone. And when you do a new one, you have to wait. I think they make you wait 32 days so they can make sure you're on the up and up and everything else. So we won't be having or able to have the show monetized. And that means that super chats and super stickers are down for the count for at least 32 days. So that's what's happening. Thank you for your willingness to always contribute to the show, Wes, though, and for wanting it. You can, to know it about it, you can find the PayPal donation link in the show description if you're so inclined there. And I know you already contribute to the show and just thank you so much for that. Really appreciate it. Hawaiian music. Have you heard of the Hawaiian Rainbow online? Mostly music in the Hawaiian language. I have not, but I will check it out. I really love Hawaiian music a lot. So I will look at that. Thanks for the recommendation. Okay, so let's get back to this art question. So you may have been to museums, or even if you haven't, you've seen the Statue of the David, right? If I say it, you know what it looks like in your mind's eye. It is part of global culture. Everyone knows what it looks like. It's this famous statue. And so a lot of people capitalize on it. You can see here, t-shirts where the David is holding a rose, or his lips are painted pink, or what have you. I once purchased a refrigerator magnet that was the statue of the David, fully naked, everything. And then it came with, beach shorts or swim trunks and a t-shirt and a tuxedo. And so depending on your mood for the day, you could dress your fridge magnet David up in clothes that you thought he looked good in for the day. He had jeans, he had a sweater, all these things, right? He had flip-flops even. Is that, though, really capitalizing on someone else's art and cheapening it in a way? There is a big push now to not let things like that happen. And the question is, do you protect the dignity of art like the David, or do you just allow for freedom of expression, which means your take on the David, on however you see the David or other pieces of art, that all of these things you're merchandising and selling, even though you didn't come up with the David, are okay. So there's, you know, in Florence, all of these refrigerator magnets, souvenirs. The curators are worried that the religious and the political significance is diminished by all of these kitschy items that are being offered. And a lot of them do focus on his unit, right? His man parts. So the Galleria dell'Accademia's director is now trying to defend the David. And she's taking aim at the people that profit off of his image. She says it's debasing. And this is aprons with his figure on it, T-shirts with obscene gestures that David is making in the right, figurines in the neon. We just saw those a minute. Yeah, there they are. Look at the neon figurines. And so she's hired this attorney, or the state attorney's office in Florence, rather, working at her behest, is now doing a series of court cases involving Italy's landmark cultural heritage code. The code is supposed to protect artistic treasures from being disparaged or being used in a commercial way that's unauthorized. And they have won hundreds of thousands of euros in damages since they've been fighting against this in 2017. One of the victories, they say there was a great joy through the world for a unique victory that we managed to achieve, and questions from all over about how we did it, and people asking advice on how they can do it in their own countries. David is not the only piece of art that people do this. It's the most popular ones, the most well-known. You see it with the Vitruvian Man, Leonardo da Vinci, Donatello's David, of course, and Botticelli's Birth of Venus. Also, Mona Lisa, you've seen people profiting off of that, right? The intellectual property rights to art are only protected for a specific period before everything goes, right? It's in the public domain and have at it. It's the artist's lifetime plus 70 years. That's according to the Berne Convention, signed by more than 180 countries, including Italy. So the artist's lifetime, and then when they pass, an extra 70 years. But the cultural significance and meaning, even though something's in the public domain, takes on a whole nother issue and a whole nother life. So some people say when you pop culturize a piece of classic art, that can also become art, like the works of Andy Warhol, sometimes focused on other people's art to make his own art, right? And so then are you squashing freedom of expression? An interesting question, I think. So there are now court cases debating on whether this law in Italy violates another law in the European Union, saying this artwork no longer protected by copyright falls into the public domain, meaning that everyone should be able to be free to make and use and share copies of that artwork. So far, they haven't really addressed the issue, but they're still working in Italy on cracking down on this type of thing. Meanwhile, there are little tourist shops all over the place still trying to sell this stuff. So what do you think? Do you think that people should be allowed to capitalize? Or do you think some things should be held sacred? And Cameo says everything is David merch at the Academy. Right, practice what you preach. Yeah, Frida Kahlo's image as well. It is a little tacky, right? I think, I don't know. I mean, I at this point, there's so much out there already. I mean, so many people have purchased these neon statues, or as I had, I don't have it anymore, but that refrigerator magnet. So Heather says, I have the magnet set too. His underpants are always on his head. That's funny. I always had him in the swim trunks and flip-flops on my fridge. Yeah. I mean, it's a debate, right? I tend to think, as they say, the cat's out of the bag, someone wrote, and it's too late to put it back in. So lifetime plus 70 years. Either we have the rule or we don't have the rule. Heather says it's not hurting anyone. If you don't like Goofy David magnets, don't buy them. Exactly. Why all this worry about art? Seems like social issues are more important. Well, it's not to the people that are art lovers, not to the people that run the museum, not to the people that worry that, you know, these pieces of art that they love are being debased or somehow undignified, right, in a certain way. So, I mean, I think everything, there's a time and place for discussion of everything. And I haven't heard this talked about, so I thought it was interesting to bring up here. But if you think there are more important things, well, let's move right along. How about that? Yeah. Chris says it's a cultural, Italy has a cultural icon. They should protect it. All right. How about this one? Speaking of Hawaii, this lady, she's an energy healer. And so all the decisions in her life are made by consulting the astrology charts type of thing. And so her daughter, who lives on the Big Island of Hawaii, said, you should buy this land here. And she thought, okay, well, I could do this and one day maybe build a retreat for women here. So she really looks into which plot of land she wants. She said she believes in the sacredness and the sanctity of the land. She looked at consulted the astrological charts. She's a big believer in numerology and the longitude, latitude, whatever, everything matched up with the numbers that meant this was the perfect plot of land for her. So she buys the land and it's at auction and it's like $22,000-ish. Pretty cheap, but there's nothing on the land. Why is there a house there, you ask? Well, that's because someone mistook her plot for another plot and they built a house on it. It was the wrong lot. Yep. The construction of this 3-bedroom family home on the wrong plot of land is now a court case. She said, I felt terrible. I wanted to cry. There's a house on the land and it's not mine. This woman is from Concord here in California. She bought it for $22,500. And she actually got a letter in the mail from a developer offering to buy the land. She ignored it because she didn't want to sell the land. And then last year in June, she gets a call from a real estate agent in Hawaii. And they say, we just sold a house that happens to be on your land. And they said, you need to resolve this. And she's confused and surprised. And she says, no, you have to remove that house from my property. I don't want that on there. I had planned to build something completely different. So the building company was hired by a developer to build homes on the tract. They were supposed to build on parcel 115, but according to SF Gate, they built on her parcel 114 right next door. And then they sold the house. Thankfully, when it was going through escrow, the mistake was discovered. And so this sale of the house was canceled. Can you believe it? She thinks that the builder who totally bulldozed the lot, you know, leveled it, everything, they did a lot of work to build this house. She thinks that they miscounted the number of telephone poles on the street and that they didn't use a surveyor. The developer says they made their best effort to ensure the home was built on the right property and they didn't do it maliciously. And they want her now to sell them the plot of land on which they built the house. And she's like, no, you don't understand. I want this plot of land. Numerologically, it aligns with my energy or what have you. And they're like, what? Yeah. They offered to give her any other plot of land on this street in exchange for hers, but she turns it down because the only reason she bought this land is because it aligned with all of her stars, right? They say her demands aren't reasonable. And they are suing her. Can you believe this? They are suing her. And the property value, by the way, has already increased with this house on it. And so now they're suing her, saying that because she won't sell and she's being unreasonable, that she needs to pay for the home that they built on her land. Yeah, they're suing the construction crew. They're suing the architect. They're suing the county. They're suing her. They're suing the previous owner. They're suing everyone. They say that they have been materially breached their contract by constructing a house on the wrong lot and failing to do due diligence. That's why they're suing the contractor. It's hard to believe that they're suing her, right? They made the mistake. And she's the one being sued. Wild. The house, she says, it's nice. Unfortunately, because it's sitting there empty, squatters have come. And so the inside is trashed. Nothing that can't be fixed. But she doesn't want the house on there anyway, and she's asking for them to get it off. She also, by the way, has had her property taxes double because of the increase in the value of the land with the house on it now. So, but yeah, it's hard to believe the developer is suing her, saying she was unjustly enriched by this construction of the home on her land and she should pay them back. Outrageous. She says they are bullies. They are bullying her. And they're like, listen, we're not bullies. We just want our money back. What an absolute mess. The last person I think should have to deal with this or have to pay any restitution is the owner of the land, who had nothing to do with someone coming onto her property and building. As a matter of fact, I would say they should be charged with at minimum trespassing because they set foot on her property without permission. As a matter of fact, they sent her a letter, right? Asking if they could buy her property, and she said no. It's almost like they just didn't care and they wanted to build here anyway. I don't know. I mean, you think something is yours and then no. Heather's like, yeah, the developers need to eat their mistake. Absolutely. Wes says Florida just passed an anti-squatting law. California needs one. Well, this is on the Big Island of Hawaii. But yeah, I mean, I think it's illegal to squat in anyone's home, isn't it? I have to look into the laws here in California. And John says apparently there were lawyers in the stars. Didn't see that coming. Nope. Mm-mm. Yeah, somebody did screw up and it isn't her fault and she shouldn't have to pay for it. At the very least, she should get a free house out of it. And now the land that she bought at auction for $22,500 is worth more than $300,000. So she could sell it and I think she gets to pocket that money. Call Katz and Sue. Exactly. When you're a business and you make a mistake, you're the one responsible to make it right. What a novel concept, Karen. You would think that everyone would operate that way, right? And would you ever want to do business with people that didn't? No. Chris says she's free to disassemble it. Is she, though? Because now it's the subject of a lawsuit where they're saying she's got to pay them for it. So if she ends up being on the hook for a house they built on her land, at least she can sell it and pay them back. I don't know. That's what I would worry about, Mindy, is that then, you know, they would sue her for even more. I blame you. Exactly. The developer says Heather should have checked their star charts before the building. Outrageous. Outrageous that you could make such a horrendous and stupid and costly mistake and blame someone that had absolutely nothing to do with it simply because they won't help you make it right for your pocketbook, because they won't say, oh, you accidentally built on my land? Sure. Let me sell you the land that was important to me that I wanted to keep because you made a mistake. Pfft, ridiculous. Yes, it is her property now, and they are not happy. Mm-mm. If you could please click the like button, I would appreciate it. Now is the moment to just clickety click. If you're here and you haven't subscribed, please subscribe as well. All of this is free, and I really appreciate you guys helping me click the like and click the subscribe as well. If you've already clicked like and subscribe, don't click it again. That'll take it away. Just click it if you haven't clicked it yet. Let's talk about this. This is gross. You're like, why do we want to talk about that, Kim? Well, okay, how about we not talk about this yet? How about we talk about animals? Let's get to animals. Let's do that. I have a video to show you of this lamb right in time for Easter. It is a five-legged lamb, and this thing is so cute. But yeah, it doesn't quite look like the others, does it? Here's a video of this sweet, sweet little lamb. There you go.
Legged lamb is a first for the clinic.
His name is Spider Lamb because of his legs.
Spider Lamb, I'd say, is one of a kind, for sure.
Natalie Reno brought the lamb to the vet Monday after rescuing him from another farm. She says thousands of maggots were eating him alive.
He's already improved so much overnight. I feel like last night was probably the most critical considering how bad he was in.
Dr. Jason Goulas says lambs begin to walk almost 15 minutes after birth. At less than a week old, Spider Lamb is working on gaining the strength and balance to stand.
He definitely has some abnormalities. He may not be a normal lamb compared to other lambs, but I think he will live a normal for him life.
A lot of them, you know, that people would have given up on, make recoveries. Animals make remarkable recoveries.
Natalie Reno says being able to rescue animals is a privilege, and it's more the animals doing good for her than it is her doing good for them. In Harrison County, Destiny Polster, WLOX News Now.
Our thanks to WLOX. Cute little lamb, and sounds like it was in really bad shape when they found it, so I'm so glad that they rescued that little lamb and that everything's okay, or is going to be okay. How about this one? This is one of these stories where you get on a plane, you expect that your animal is being loaded into, I don't know, the animal cargo area, and the animal escapes, and that is not what happened at all. The dog, this is a little dog, got free, was running around the tarmac, disappeared in the airport. Total nightmare. Let's check in here.
Yeah, we're told that Moose was reunited and even had a big breakfast earlier today. We did reach out to RDU staff here as well as Alaska Airlines, who couldn't go into specific details about where and how they found the dog. But I can tell you, hearing from crews that were involved in that search, that dog was all over the place out here. A boxer mix named Moose, now safe, but with quite a journey here at RDU. An adventure that never left the ground.
I can imagine just pure panic. I know all dog owners love their dogs.
Sydney Timberlake with her dog Louie is one of several people reacting after learning of Moose's escape from Alaska Airlines. The airline company says the dog never got on its initial flight with its owner because of a cargo loading error. Then, after waiting to load Moose on a later flight, Moose pulled out of his collar and got away.
Most of the time when we spotted it, it would take off running.
Clarence Kinley, a supervisor with Wake County Animal Control, says they got the call around 8:30 Wednesday morning. They spotted Moose several times near Sawyer Circle, the rental cars, but eventually lost him near the terminals.
With all the loud noise as far as airplanes taking off and the traffic, we were really worried about him running into the woods to 540 and getting hit.
After continuing to search, RDU says law enforcement and fire rescue crews reunited Moose with his owner the next morning.
Well, I guess I would wonder, is it safe to bring my dog to travel? Do I know that he'll get back to where I'm going safely?
Alaska Airlines provided the owner with a sincere apology and says they're revisiting their processes to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, my bad. I'm sorry. We lost your dog. At least she got the dog back. So that's the good thing, right? Okay, so let's talk about the images from history. How about that? We'll leave the gross thing for a bit later. It's always fascinating to me. You know, that scientists will unearth these remains and they'll try to use digital enhancements based on the measurements of the skull and the face to recreate a face out of history. And that is what they have done here. This is an ancient Chinese emperor on what he looked like. I wouldn't mess with that guy. Emperor Wu of the Northern Zhu. He reigned from 560 to 578 CE. When he died, he was 36 years old. And a team in China used ancient DNA to reconstruct his face. So this is more than 1,500 years ago that Emperor Wu ruled the Zhu dynasty. The researchers published their facial reconstruction that they did in the journal Current Biology. It looks at his cause of death, the migration pattern of the nomadic empire. They say when he ruled, he built a really strong military, unified northern parts of China, defeated the northern Qi dynasty. They found his tomb in northwestern China in 1996 and several bones, including a nearly complete skull. So DNA research techniques have advanced since then. This time, they take the skull and they're able to recover by DNA a million single nucleotide polymorphisms, or SNPs, which represent a difference in the single building blocks of DNA. These occur normally throughout DNA, and each human genome has about 4 to 5 million of them we're walking around with. But to be classified as a SNP, an SNP, the variant has to be found in at least 1% of the population. Anyway, they found SNPs that contained information about Wu's hair, his skin color. They think he was ethnically a Zanbai, which is an ancient nomadic group primarily found in Mongolia and northern and northeastern China. Some scholars say he had exotic looks like a thick beard and a high nose bridge and yellow hair. But the analysis done via DNA says no, he didn't. He had typical facial characteristics, typical Asian facial characteristics. So they reconstruct his face as a 3D rendering using open source Blender software. And it's based on soft tissue depth of an average of modern Chinese persons. And then they also used some different systems that predicted other traits. The genetic data revealed he had brown eyes, black hair, dark to intermediate skin. His facial features were similar to those from parts of northern and eastern Asia today. The work bringing historical figures to life. And that's interesting. All the science is interesting. But what it is to me when I look at his face, and I'm thinking it's probably, you know, if it's accurate, how weird to see a face emerge from history like that from so long ago. Anyway, okay, let's talk about Pueblo Mágico. That's right. Look at that. That looks like a nice place to visit, right? On this Friday that's a little rainy around the Bay Area, it sounds pretty good. Apparently, people from California are obsessed with this Mexican beach town. It's called Todos Santos. And they're moving there. And the rents have quadrupled because people just can't get enough of it. Love it there. They call it Pueblo Mágico, or Magic Town. Magical for its beauty, the importance to history that it has, enchanting legends, natural wonders. But people are coming there from California. They're buying land, they're building vacation homes, they're working remotely, they're inviting their friends to come check it out as well. And so, as Californians head there, you know what's happening. Yep, that's what's happening. So this place has changed, but people are still loving it and still enjoying it. It's very, very beautiful. They have agave fields, tequila caves, and now pickleball courts and bocce ball courts. They have villas with rooftop hot tubs, which is a thing in Todos Santos. Margaritas at the pool. I mean, it's like a permanent vacation working from home in Todos Santos. But as more people move there, you know, it does change. They call it the Alta California invasion. And there's a lot of new buildings. The flavor of the place is changing. It's a boom that is increasing housing costs for the people that did live there. So, yeah. Apparently, the article in SF Gate says, if you're in California, you see a shack like one of these and you say, oh, that's 2 million right on the beach, right? But in Todos Santos, you look at a structure that may be crumbling, but is right on the ocean. And you look at it and say, oh, you can buy a house with a pool for 2 million. Give me two of them, whatever it may be. So now, because all the people are moving here, they have to start addressing issues with traffic and water and waste and all the things that maybe they didn't have the infrastructure for before. It was a desert town between the sea and the mountains where the lifestyle was mellow and everyone was super friendly. And it's just changing a little bit. Todos Santos. Still, though, despite the changes, makes me want to go there. You know, it's funny when people that have so much money, like Shohei Ohtani, still dig the free stuff, right? Like there's some old part of you that doesn't quite realize how much money you have and how free stuff shouldn't really matter anymore. But apparently when he met with the San Francisco Giants and other Major League Baseball teams, he, in some cases, really loved getting the free stuff that they gave him at all these ballparks. So he went to all these ballparks and went on these trips and met with the different organizations. And at every turn, he made sure that he left with some kind of souvenir. When he met with the Giants in San Francisco, they gave him a cap and the nameplate that would have been over his locker. They already had it made. In Toronto, he got bags of Blue Jays gear. He got a Canada jacket. I mean, he's getting free stuff everywhere he goes. Apparently, he was just collecting keepsakes. No amount of stuff that he got, the amount of stuff he got, rather, was not an indication of his interest in the organization. But they say the merchandise he got paled in comparison with what the Dodgers gave him. So, yeah, I just think it's cute. Weird, but cute that he was in it for the free stuff, allegedly. All right, now we're moving to the story that's gross and a little disturbing, I have to say. There were rumors of this for a really long time, that at Harvard, they had a book made of, with a bound, rather, I should say, in human skin. And for a long time, they joked about it. They kind of made these off-the-cuff jokes. Kind of like, I don't know, big worded jokes, right? As one would do at Harvard. And what did they say? Okay, here's what they said originally in like 2014 when the book was found. They said, good news for fans of anthropodermic bibliopegy, bibliomaniacs, and cannibals alike. We have a book made of skin. They didn't really take it very seriously or they weren't dignified in their response. Fast forward to 2024. Now they're acknowledging their past failures in having this book around. And they're saying, yes, we compromised the dignity of the human being whose remains were used for its binding. We apologize. The old my bad, I'm sorry approach to those adversely affected by these actions. And now they're taking action to remove the skin from the book, send it back from whence it came, and make sure that it is buried in a way that is respectful and dignified. You can't check the book out. You can't see it. It's in a private spot in the library now. you can't even read what's inside, which is a French book called Des Destinées de l'Âme. It was written in the 1880s by Arsène Houssay. What they have done is they've taken the content of the book and they've put it online for people to read. The reason this book is bound in human skin, and it was in the 19th century, is that the doctor who owned it first, his name is Ludovic Bouland. He was a doctor in France. And he wrote a note saying, a book about the human soul deserved to have a human covering. They think that he got the skin from the hospital where he worked. And it's believed to have been taken from a woman who died in a psychiatric facility and taken without her consent. So now the work begins to find out, and there are Harvard researchers working on it, to find out who she was, when this happened, right, to kind of track down the whole story of the skin, so that maybe if there are descendants, they can be notified. Maybe if they can find where she's buried, they can bury the skin there as well. All of these things are happening. So this book, though, has been at the center of rumor and even hazing incidents at Harvard. Some students were told to retrieve the book without being told that it was made of human skin type of thing. This thing is kind of it's been a big deal at Harvard for a while. At one point, they denied having a book with human skin. Then they came out making jokes about it again. Now they're finally taking it seriously. So, hard to believe someone would do that. The original rumors were that there were three books bound in human skin. It's very Silence of the Lambs, is it not? Yeah. Super gross. Very disrespectful. Yeah. Sitting at a quiet bench at Epcot listening to the after party. Oh, you're at Epcot. Well, this isn't the happiest story in the world, is it? I hope you're having a good time, though. Can they do genetic tests on it? Yes, and they will. And that is part of what they are doing. Mm-hmm. I think so. Yes, Eileen. This is different than that in which, you know, obviously, people were being tortured and murdered, and this woman had already passed. But the disrespectful nature of using someone's skin to bind a book, especially without their consent, I think that's the problem. You know, if you're looking at severity of wrongdoing, I would say that what you mentioned is much more wrong than this, but still. Calvin says, dark magic, witches and warlocks, be gone. Ooh, yeah. It's gross. Yeah. All right, let's take the picture away. Whew, we're going from skin to a really cool castle. It is a castle that was uncovered. They didn't know it was down here. Oh, Wes is people watching. I love it. Well, check out this castle. This castle, also in France, a lot of French news here today. It was at the excavation of a French hotel. So in northwestern France, they're doing some work, but because of this area, they have to do a preventative dig on the hotel property. It's in the city of Vannes, V-A-N-N-E-S, Vannes, not sure how to pronounce it. The plans were underway there to take this hotel property and build a fine arts museum. So they have to do this preventative dig. When they did that, look at what they found. Unexpected, they say, a piercing through thick embankment in the courtyard of this former private mansion known as the Chateau Lagorsay. The excavators discovered two stories of this ancient fortress-like castle, relatively well-preserved, on the ground floor, which was at times 13 feet beneath the surface of the embankment. Splayed out across this property, it measured about 140 feet long and 50 feet wide overall. So interesting. The structure was built, they say, by the Duke of Brittany Jean IV around the year 1380. The castle was his, the desire to build it tied to the Duke's desire to assert his power. Its advanced architecture, structural complexities, and size indicate that the Duke took construction on this dwelling space quite seriously. The archaeologists think that building this was a highly organized ordeal because they found markings on some of the stones there that look like it was the workers' way of following a building plan. So they also found evidence within the bounds of the castle ruins that suggested the original structure had 3 or maybe even 4 different floors. They found the remnants of staircases. They described one staircase as very ornate and remarkably preserved, with 3 distinctive steps and a space for a window seat. How nice. The remains of the castle's functional elements were unveiled too. So there were a set of latrines, drainage pipes on either end of the property that seemed to have been used from some of the upper floors. And when they looked in the latrines and the pipes, they found a bunch of other stuff, objects. I don't know what they were doing in the pipes, but among them were coins, jewelry, cooking appliances, pots and pans, wooden bowls, fragments, wooden barrels, and the humidity in this area really helped to preserve everything. So here's some more pictures of the things that they found. Look at those old coins. Is that crazy? From 1380. I mean, in France, I guess this is par for the course. Here in California, I'm thinking, whoa. Here's another shot of the castle excavation. You see the stairs there? I guess there's a spot for a window seat somewhere. How cool when you're excavating to find something like that. Look at the old stones and how well preserved everything is. Wild. You never know. You're digging in a country like that with such history. What's going to happen? What are you going to uncover? They also, by the way, uncovered a mill built into the residential parts of the castle in a pretty original way. It was inside of a room, inside of a portion of the building that archaeologists say is a square tower that was on one end of the structure, and there was a moat that encircled the entire thing. So the records of this mill haven't survived, but they found a space where a wheel was inserted into the device, and it was powered by water flowing through a canal that passed underneath the castle building and was then released out into the moat through a grated opening in the mill room. So it was all very complicated going on here. They also found the remains of a bridge that would have stretched over the moat and connected the castle to the outside world and the nearby city. So what they're going to do with it now, I'm not sure. Can they build the museum here? Seems like you would want to excavate this and maybe have the castle be the museum. I don't know. I mean, if I'm traveling, that's something I want to go see. I would make a stop for that. No. How about this? A new sea creature. You know how I love a new creature in the world. This is a yellow tentacled brand new deep sea creature, a new species, and it was found thousands of feet below the surface of the South China Sea. The scientists had this submarine that they took down. Something on the seafloor caught their eye. This yellowy creature with all these appendages. They went on 5 dives in this manned submersible vehicle between 2018 and 2023. And all the work that they did is in the peer-reviewed journal Zoo Keys. And over the course of these dives they took, they found 3 yellowy, unfamiliar-looking sea cucumbers. And so they collected them and they brought them back up to the surface and they took a closer look and they realized this isn't a sea cucumber. This is a whole new species. So they named it, I'm going to mess this up, Onirophanta idsecia, something, or the IDSSE cucumber. There you go. The IDSSE cucumbers can reach about 1 foot in length, 3 inches in width, They have a cylindrical yellowish white body with 15 tentacles and over 80 tube feet. They use the feet to suction onto surfaces and move around. That according to researchers at the University of Hawaii. We'll have more stories like this because thousands of new species are found every year. But I just, wanted to show you the picture. Welcome to the world, sea cucumber IDSSE. How cool. Amazing that we don't even know half of what's in our world. We don't know what's out there. So every time something cool is found, I'm like, yes. But off of our world, we're still finding things out about the planets that are nearby. And this story is about a volcano discovered on Mars, the size of Mount Everest, at least. And the researchers say it was just hiding in plain sight. And it's making some pretty big waves in the science community right now. This oddly shaped volcano, apparently taller than Mount Everest, is on the surface of Mars. And it's been just sitting there. And for decades, researchers have been, looking at this planet, and they just now saw it. The findings were presented at the 55th Lunar and Planetary Science Conference in Texas. And there are some skeptics who are like, really, is that a volcano? Yeah. But a doctoral student of geology at the University of Maryland College Park identified this volcano within Mars' Noctis Labyrinthus region. It's a patch of terrain near the equator with a web of canyons. And they say that it eluded scientists despite years of satellite observation because it doesn't tower over its surrounding landscape. It's deeply eroded, it's eaten up, it's kind of collapsed by erosion, to the point that unless you're really looking for a volcano, you wouldn't see that it's a volcano very quickly, right? You wouldn't know it unless that's what you were focused on. It could have revelations for scientists understanding the geology of Mars. They're hoping that by figuring this out, it could bring future exploratory missions to the area, maybe looking for water or ice or signs of life even. I don't know. The reason for that is because the research team did a study or led to the study that suggests that this region where the volcano was found could be home or may have been home to a massive glacier covered in salt deposits. So now they're looking through all this NASA data, trying to figure out whether water might still be frozen beneath the salt in this area. The hunt for water ice is key, and that's a resource that could be used to sustain human exploration on Mars, or they say even convert it into rocket fuel. While they're looking at this landscape, they apparently saw this little lava flow right next to a glacier. It hadn't been fully oxidized, which would turn it the same muddy orange hue as the rest of the surface of Mars. And so they think the lava might be relatively fresh and relatively, not like yesterday, but still. But that was the first hint that they figured out that there could have been this volcano that was lurking. And that's when they started to really look at the landscape and go, oh, okay. And so when they examined the high points of the region, you can see the measurements there. That's when they noticed they formed an arc. And the arc is reminiscent of the shield of a volcano, the type of volcano that also exists here on Earth. Shield volcanoes are known for having broad, gently sloping sides, wider than they are tall. And so this leads the researchers to collect more evidence, and eventually they figure out, by making all kinds of measurements and sifting through all kinds of data, that this Martian volcano was 29,600 feet tall. And that was the tip of this Martian volcano. It's a few hundred feet taller than Mount Everest, which is 29,029 feet. So they're still working on mapping it. and doing all these things. Interesting. What we don't know and what we learn, right? And we have, I think we have a little time left. This story came from CNN. And apparently this is right back here on Earth in our own oceans. Something discovered. A gravity hole. I didn't know there was such a thing as a gravity hole. Apparently there is. And it's in the Indian Ocean. And scientists now think they know why. This is a spot where the Earth's gravitational pull is weaker and its mass is lower than normal. And then the sea level dips by over 328 feet. And geologists have known about this for a long time. But finally, researchers from the Indian Institute of Science in Bengaluru, India, have what they think is a credible explanation for this formation. Plumes of magma coming from deep inside the planet, much like those that led to the creation of volcanoes. So in order to come to this thought, this hypothesis, they used supercomputers to simulate how the area could have formed. And they went back as far as 140 million years. They detailed their findings in a study in the journal Geophysical Research Letters. And it centers around an ancient ocean that no longer exists. The Earth, they said, is a lumpy potato, is what it looks like. It's not a sphere. It's what we call an ellipsoid, because as the planet rotates, the middle part bulges outward. And so using this affects, they say, the Earth's surface and its gravity. So if you pour water onto the surface of the Earth, the level the water takes is called a geoid, which is controlled by these density differences in the material inside the planet, because they attract the surface in very different ways, depending on how much mass is underneath. The gravity hole in the Indian Ocean, which is called the Indian Ocean geoid low, its lowest point in that geoid and its biggest gravitational anomaly, forming this circular depression that starts just off India's southern tip and covers about 1.2 million square miles. Interesting. And again, when I say we've known about this for a long time, since 1948, during a gravity survey from a ship, a Dutch geophysicist finds it. But they say it's by far the biggest low in the geoid, and it hasn't been explained properly. So they did this research. They used these computer models to go back 140 million years when the oceans and the continents were in very different places. And then they run all these simulations up to present day. And they did all these models, and they found that in all of the models, the distinguishing factor was the presence of plumes of magma around the geoid low, which along with the mantle structure in the vicinity are believed to be responsible for the formation of the gravity hole. Are they right? Don't know, but it's interesting. And for the first time, someone's coming up with some type of reasoning behind it. How about a smelly flower for you? No, you don't want that? I don't blame you for not wanting that. This is definitely a stink bomb. Very, very pungent. This plant in Arizona is so smelly that it's forced this picnic area that people love to frequent to close down for a month. It's called StinkNet. And it might look pretty, yellow flowers there. Apparently, it smells like turpentine, and if you are around it for a while, it can cause serious breathing problems and skin rashes, severe skin rashes as well. So they closed this whole area down. Casa Grande Ruins National Monument says they're going to close this area until at least April 30th because of the density of this invasive and noxious winter weed. It can grow more than 2 feet tall, but they say it has the smell of like turpentine, also compared to nail polish remover or burnt rubber. And officials at the attraction in Coolidge, Arizona, are telling people don't walk near, don't step on this flowering weed to avoid spreading it around. Because if, you know, you get it on your shoes, then the next thing you walk through your yard and it's growing there too. They don't want to do that. They're trying to work on a solution to get this picnic area reopened as soon as possible, but it might go beyond April. We'll see. You believe? I knew that we have a stinky flower that blooms, like, I don't know, however, once every so often years at botanical gardens, like the one in Golden Gate Park. I think there's another one in San Diego, but I hadn't heard of this one, Stinknet. I'm sure there's another name for it, but okay, I'm going to do one more story about this Van Gogh lizard. Why is it named Van Gogh? Well, I think we can, I don't have the story, hold on. I think we can imagine why it was called the Van Gogh lizard, because it might have to do with its little ears. Yeah, here's a picture of the Van Gogh lizard that I have for you. There it is. Yeah. The Van Gogh lizard. It's a new gecko species that was found wandering through the landscapes of India, apparently. There was a group of scientists from the Thackeray Wildlife Foundation, and they found, as they looked, the back of this lizard with patterns and colors adorning its skin. They think it looks a lot like the Starry, Starry Night, the Starry Night Van Gogh picture. So it doesn't have to do with his ears after all. It has to do with the pattern on him. They say they named it the Van Goghi. Not just any lizard. The male of the species has a striking appearance with a yellow head and a forebody punctuated by light blue spots along the back. The new species shares its home with rocks, occasionally gracing walls of buildings and branches of trees with its presence. They have published their findings in the journal Zookeys, Z-O-O-K-E-Y-S, underscoring this area in India's hotspot of biodiversity. It's the Tamil Nadu. This small-sized gecko is only about 3.5 centimeters in length. And it was found in this area. They think it's a diurnal creature that thrives in the cooler hours of dawn and dusk, primarily residing in the rocks. Interesting. So there you go. Vincent Van Gogh has a lizard, the Van Goghi, just unveiled by scientists. I have another picture so you can see the stars on his back. Here, let me get it loaded for you. Because this is, you can kind of see, right? But this one is from up above. So maybe you can see a little bit more what they're thinking when they named it the Van Goghi. Kind of a pretty little lizard, if you think lizards are pretty. See if I can't watch. Now it's not going to work. Oh, here he is. Yeah, it'll work. So you can see why they think maybe it looks like Starry, Starry Night. I don't think he's as pretty as a painting, but he's cool looking. So, all right, that is the show on this Friday. No ears? No, he has ears, it looks like. Yeah. Geckos are cool, says Mo, if you have a couple in your home and they take care of the spiders and the mosquitoes. Well, geckos in Hawaii are lucky, right? They eat all the bugs and they're supposed to be lucky if you see one crawling on your wall. Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad you like the science. Well done on trivia yesterday as well. Well, thank you guys for being here. Please click the like button on your way out. And I hope I see you on Monday. We'll have some more interesting stories. I have a story about a whole new discovery of a seagrass area. And scientists have looked at it from a different perspective by strapping cameras onto tiger sharks. How they got the cameras onto tiger sharks, I mean, they deserve a medal for that. Or, I don't know. I mean, some people would say, leave the tiger sharks alone. I think you're pretty ballsy if you're strapping cameras onto sharks, but that's just me. Thank you for being here. I haven't had time to look at when I'm talking to read all the comments. So now I get to go back and read all the things that you guys were saying. And I'm sorry if you said something funny and I didn't put it up on the screen. I think that all the time when I see all the things that you said, I'm like, oh, I wish I would have been able to comment on that. Sorry, it's hard to do this alone. But I really appreciate you spending time this afternoon. Well, the whole day, really, for people that were with the Nicki Maduro show at 9, the Mark Thompson show starting at 11, and then this show as well. So thank you for hanging out and being part of it. Have a great weekend. If you celebrate Easter, happy Easter to you. Hope you have a good one. And if you don't, I still hope you have a great weekend. Stay dry on this rainy weekend. Wes, have a great time at Epcot. And I'll see you guys back here on Monday. Bye-bye, you guys.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.